Hey everyone, this is Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jack Doherty.
I'm Jake Runyon.
And by our powers combined, we are the Canned Air Podcast. But right now, you're listening to the PVD Cast.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I'm your host, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 139. And yes, I know it's been forever since we even talked about the subject of this particular podcast, but hey, it is what it is. The Thanksgiving holiday and everyone's schedule just became a mess, and that's why it's taken me forever to get this episode, the Survivor Series review episode, up and ready to go. As you know, on episode 137 a few weeks ago, DJ Joey Blaze and Ringside Rand joined me, and we gave our predictions, our insights, and our thoughts about the upcoming pay-per-view, the Survivor Series, which was happening on November 19th. So I'm going to be joined by Ringside Rand, and we're going to sit down and talk about the results of the pay-per-view, as well as I'm going to dabble a little bit in the results of NXT TakeOver War Games. We're going to talk a little bit about the current storylines going on, and also the Ric Flair 30 for 30 documentary that we didn't get a chance to talk about two episodes ago. Now, you will notice that I said it's going to be Ringside Rand and myself. Unfortunately, DJ Joey Blaze could not make the recording of this episode. Literally a few hours prior to recording, his car broke down and he had to go to the garage and he was stressed to the max and couldn't make it. So we're sorry that DJ Joey Blaze is not going to be here. We missed you, man. We really did. And trust me, he'll be back for the Royal Rumble preview that we'll be doing in January along with Ringside Rand. But kick back and sit back and listen to this great episode as we wax poetic about the WWE's fall tradition, the Survivor Series. But before I get into that, let me remind you that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/PVDcast. Audible has over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And for you, the listeners of the PVD Cast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a 30-day trial to give you an opportunity to check out their great service. I mean, with 180,000 titles, they literally have a book for everything, including erotic fiction, if you're into that type of thing. And as a side note, I was not specifically looking up that genre. It came up in a search when I was looking for books that happened to do with Vince McMahon. That's right. Somehow, in Audible's catalog, Vince McMahon equals erotic fiction. But hey, man, I'm not going to judge. If you like erotic fiction, they got it. Or if you like biographies, they got it. Whatever your genre that you want to check out, Audible has a book for that genre. So to download your free audiobook today, all you got to do is go to audibletrial.com/PVDcast. Again, that's audibletrial.com/PVDcast to get your hands on a free audiobook. Now that that's out of the way, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of the break, I'll be joined by Ringside Rand as we review the Survivor Series. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another installment of the PVD Cast. It is John Orlando here. I'm joined by Ringside Rand, the man from the Golden Ghetto.
And how are we today? Things are good.
Things are good. How are things with you?
Slightly saddened by the demise of Jim Nabors.
Yes.
I'm a big fan of the Andy Griffith Show. I'm sorry to hear.
Yeah.
Goomer's a goner.
Yeah. 67? Was that it? Or no? 76.
87 years old.
87?
Oh, he was
okay.
87.
He was 87. Okay. Where did I get 76 from?
That might have been the year that...
Oh, I think it was. Yeah. I think you're right. Yeah. So, yeah, Gomer Pyle is R.I.P., if you will.
One of my big connections to in the Andy Griffith Show is the early days of WTCG, which later became WTBS with George, excuse me, Georgia Championship Wrestling on Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah.
Frequently before and after the Andy Griffith Show.
Yes.
Or Braves baseball games.
You know what? I think that was even a staple in the 80s.
Oh, it carried.
Yeah, it carried. Yeah, there was always Andy Griffith on before Saturday night or the Sunday night show that they had.
2 hours on Saturday, one on Sunday.
Sunday. Yeah. Well, we were supposed to be joined, of course, by the other one-third of our six-man tag team here.
Oh, jeez.
DJ Joey Blaze could not make it, had some car problems.
I think he's trying to get a quarter so he can put it in a shopping cart at Aldi's.
Well, we are missing the Terry Gordy to our Buddy Roberts and Michael Hayes. Or the Crush to our Axe and Smash, if we want to go that way. Which one's lamer? I say Crush, so he has to be Crush.
Yeah.
Because Terry Gordy is pretty badass.
They won championships. They carry WC. They carry WC.
Who? WCCW?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, they did. Yeah,
well, I'm dyslexic. Come on.
Anyways, well, DJ Joey Blaze, sorry you couldn't make it, but the show must go on, as they say, because it's been a while since we sat down and talked about Survivor Series.
I got a hint to all the degenerate gamblers. Listen to our podcast and do the opposite.
That's the rule of thumb from now on.
We were
not very good on this, were we?
There's a reason they don't have professional gambling on wrestling.
I heard that they do, actually. I've heard that, but I don't want to research that because I'm not a gambler myself. So, it has been a few weeks since we sat down and previewed the Survivor Series, but with Thanksgiving and being right there, right after the Survivor Series, it made things a little bit difficult. So we kind of do have some vision of where the WWE is going after this pay-per-view, but let's go ahead and let's run down some of the matches. And Rand, you tell me what you thought about them and whatnot.
Well, we have the confusing kickoff show.
And off air, you were saying about the kickoff show that you're not a big fan. And I am to an extent, but I am also not a fan to an extent. So go ahead and explain.
I think it's my decades of cable training. Where you know what time the pay-per-view starts, and you have an either an hour or a half-hour commercial. It's basically a commercial to sell the pay-per-view.
Sure.
I don't know too many people who ever watched that pre-show and then did not order the pay-per-view.
That's true. That's very true.
Chances are, if you made the effort to get to the pay-per-view show, the pregame show, you stayed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, since my cable company that I had years ago is out of business, I can confess to having the special cable box where everything was free.
Oh, okay.
I can't think of the name of the cable company that used to be on the east side that's out of business.
Was it Ameritech?
No.
No, because that turned into WOW. I don't know what other ones. Insight, and then there was Time Warner in town here.
It might have been Insight. It was over on East Main Street.
Okay, all right.
But I'm sure my $30 a month is what put them under.
Yeah, sure. Here's my thing. I think the pre-show is a great idea, but there's no reason to make it 2 hours. And you know, here's a prime example. You said you know when the pay-per-view started. I missed the first hour of the pre-show. I didn't know it started at 5. I swore that I thought it started at 6. My point is, I don't really see where you need that much of a pre-show.
No, you don't.
You don't.
It's largely a commercial. It's largely a recap for those who missed a couple of days.
Right.
To have three matches scattered over 2 hours isn't exciting.
It's not. By no means is it exciting. And as I said, I missed one. But all right, let's go ahead and start with the first one. And I'll let you talk a little more about it because Elias took on Matt Hardy. And this is the match that I missed because I did not know that it was going on.
I'm really starting to get into Elias. I really am.
I'm still undecided on Elias. I'm not going to lie. I know that DJ Joey Blaze is a big fan. You're being swayed over.
How many people want to walk to Houston? Because I know you wouldn't be here otherwise. His ability to insult every town musically is becoming entertaining.
Yeah, and I think with the guest stars that he's had on there, I certainly popped for when several weeks prior to this, Gallows and Anderson were on doing their silly stuff. I thought that was funny. I don't know. I'm still not sold on him, but that's okay. That's all right. He's getting a push, and he was victorious here.
There were three matches, and this was clearly the better of the three. Excuse me. Chromatically, the best of the three.
That's okay. That's fine.
He defeated the downward spiral known as Matt Hardy, who has lost without his brother. But they're turning it into the reason for the delete.
Yes. Yes. Was that showed up this past week, I believe, on Raw or the week
before?
He
got beat on Raw. Braun Strowman?
Yes, I believe so this week.
And we go to commercial with him swiping right.
Yes.
And they will add the term, the crowd chant of delete, delete, and post-production.
Well, I think that they would be smart to go that way. I mean, let's be honest, that was the best thing that TNA's put out in the last couple of years. So if they don't go with it, then whoever's making that decision in Titan Towers is an idiot if they decide not to go with it.
It brings up the question of who owns intellectual property.
Well, that's a great question because there was the big discussion about when the Hardys went to the WWE that TNA owned that particular gimmick of Broken Matt Hardy and Brother Nero, and there was a lot of discussion about it. From what I remember last hearing about is that Matt Hardy and Jeff Hardy had just let them have it and that they were going to just kind of maybe come up with something else. I don't know. You gotta think that Vince would give a call up there to Anthem Entertainment and say, "Hey, look, here's a check. Let us use it."
I think any check would be gladly accepted at Anthem at this point.
At this point, yes, I agree. So I don't know. I think that it definitely is something that the WWE should do with Matt Hardy and with Jeff Hardy. I think it would just reinvigorate their careers.
Matt's downward spiral is partly because of Jeff's injury.
Right, right.
The next match was Enzo, who, by the way, is getting so tiring.
Oh, I agree. I am so over him. I was a huge fan, I admit. But I think the reason why, and I'll just, from my own personal opinion, there's no cast. I felt like they needed each other in order to work. And him by himself, he's just an irritating douche. Okay. Not in a good way.
Because you can put irritating douche in positive terms.
Right. He did beat
Kalisto. I gave that match a 5 out of 10. Elias over Matt Hardy was a 7 out of 10.
See, I wish I would have saw that. I did write down that I did thoroughly enjoy Kalisto doing that slingshot sunset flip bomb, which was amazing. I mean, the dude's athletic as all get out. I think my big problem with Kalisto, and I'm going to sound like an old wrestling veteran, is he's got to slow down, kid. Like, I think he goes so fast that's why he botches so many moves. So, including his entrance to the ring. So I think that if he just slowed down, but yeah, this match was awful. There was not much to say about it. And again, Enzo keeps the cruiserweight title and how I don't know. How is he not a transitional champion?
And now he has the Zotrain.
Oh God.
Which, by the way, sounds like sexual harassment.
It does. It does. It does. And I'm not a fan of many of those individuals that are in the Zotrain, which if now I'm going to be honest, I'm being called out because I've got to think. Drew Gulak is one. Is it Noam Dar is also?
The fact that you don't know.
Right.
Is not a good sign.
Right. Exactly. Oh, exactly. Without a doubt.
Oh, excuse me. Joey Blaze, you had something to say? Yeah, that's what I thought.
You're gonna get a little heat on this episode of Joey Blaze, but that's all right. Next match was a tag team match: Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn against Breezango.
There are times
Breezango.
And by the way, wouldn't it be funny to be called Fabrice?
That wouldn't be bad.
Copyright infringement.
Copyright involved. Yeah.
I do find them to be funny from time to time.
Yeah.
But man, they're taking people down with them. It's hard to look at the Ascension as anything of value at this point.
Yep.
Gallows and Anderson are dipping a toe in the tempered waters.
I think Breezango though is entertaining. I think their skits backstage have been entertaining. I'm glad that they're doing something with them because they're both talented guys. Both are very talented guys, and so I think this match was the second best. I'm going to go with that Elias and Matt. I'm going to agree with you because I didn't see it, that it was the best. I think this is the second best match here. Showcasing that, Owens and Zayn are now going to be the tag team on SmackDown. That's going to be the heel tag team that's going to try to pursue these tag belts. And obviously they have great chemistry. They've been, you know, tag champions in a variety of other places.
As much as I like Kevin Owens, I really don't have any interest in Sami Zayn.
Really? See, I do now that he's a heel. I want to see what they do with him. I want to see what how irritating he can be because he's never been a heel. As far as I know, he has always been a fan favorite.
So you're more curious than you are interested.
Sure. Yeah. I would say that would be the better way to describe it. I'm more curious than interested.
There are just certain people, and Sammy's top of the list of people I just don't have any interest in.
Well, let's get to the actual pay-per-view, which real quickly, I'm going to say that I really thought it was a very good pay-per-view. I thought the Survivor Series was really solid. Sure, there were some things that weren't spectacular. There were some things that were wretched. But overall, I thought it was a pretty good. I think it was pretty good because I think that I liked the concept of Raw versus SmackDown, and they kept it interesting till the end. You know?
Yes, and the reason I disliked it, I'll mention at the end after the last match.
Sure.
You've got a great pay-per-view when you open up with New Day and The Shield.
Yes, and this match was really good. It got a little sloppy at the end. I felt that they could have trimmed a few minutes off of it, but overall, it was action-packed. It was very exciting. I think these teams matched up very, very well because you had the two representative big men and Big E and Roman Reigns and then Ambrose and Rollins matched up so well with Woods and Kofi. I thought it was just an amazingly strong opener and a way to get the crowd into it. Like I said, I'm nitpicking a little bit. I would have trimmed 2 or 3 minutes off of it a little bit, but overall, phenomenal.
There aren't many three-man tag teams with three world champions in it.
True, very true. And I think they pointed that out, though.
And none on the other side.
Yeah.
I think Kofi's had the IC once or twice.
IC title, yes. Big E has been an NXT champion.
Could he have been an IC title once?
I think he was an IC champion as well once.
But clearly, they're a better trio than they are separate. So that synergy theory comes into play.
Right. And they didn't, as we predicted, I believe DJ Joey Blaze predicted that they would break up, and they didn't, which is probably a good thing.
Another good point by DJ Joey Blaze.
So... what a great way to start off that pay-per-view with that match. I thought it was really, really well done. And then we go into the women's traditional Survivor Series match. This was kind of a little bit rough. I didn't understand. So Lana was just out there as a manager. I don't know. Was that even mentioned? I mean, I think it was mentioned halfway through the match, but that really, to me, I didn't see the point of it. Why was she there?
I think she's just like hanging out with.
She's a hanger-oner, as they would say.
She's not a valet.
No, she's not. She's not really a wrestler.
A part-time wrestler. Yeah. Does she need to get back with Rusev to have value?
I don't know. They need. This is why I think that now, and we're going to talk about it, I'm sure, here in a little bit. Now that you have this influx of women, why can't we have women tag team champions? Because there you go. You could take Lana and fit her into a tag team where you could hide her weaknesses. And there you go. Make her interesting. Make her a part of something. And there you go.
We've added 3 women on each show in the last 2 weeks.
Exactly. Which I think we'll talk a little more about that. This is the thing that annoyed the hell out of me. Why was Nia Jax the only one that got her weight announced?
She's proud of her weight.
But that's bullshit. Either do it for them all or don't do it at all.
If you ever notice women's basketball, they never mention weight.
And that's fine, but you didn't for the other women. Why? Because it's so glaring, 282 pounds. Come on. Like, it's just, it annoyed me. It just bothered me to no end.
I noticed it, but I didn't think anything of it because I've seen enough women's sporting events.
Well, it annoyed me. I also thoroughly enjoy how Michael Cole almost said that Tamina and Nia Jax were related. Yes, because all Polynesians, they're all related. Racist.
No stereotypes here. The SmackDown team, Becky Lynch, Carmella, and Natalya. Tamina and Naomi. I got to put Natalya right there with Sami Zayn. I just don't care about her.
I do, too. At this point, I've given up on her. Yes, most definitely. I agree wholeheartedly that, she does nothing for me. She needs a repackaging, big time.
The Raw team, Alicia Fox, who was a crazy captain, they got some value out of her.
They did.
Bayley was the first one to get defeated. Sasha Banks, Nia Jax, and Asuka. Came down to Asuka and Sasha versus Natalya and Tamina. Natalya put the sharpshooter on the boss, which was what Natalya does.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It's a hard thing. It happens. And I spoke at the time that when it was 2-on-1 against Asuka, that she was going to win.
You just felt that that's how they're going to build her, that she's the badass.
That she's no one's building her. Okay. Yep. She took them both out, one with a cross arm breaker, which is straight out of the Chris Benoit staple.
I was thinking Bob Backlund.
Okay.
I think Bob Backlund. Yeah, the cross.
They called him the chicken wing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And Asuka with the lock. It was a sloppy match early. But,
yes.
But I think a lot of matches when you have 5-on-5 are just sloppy early. And they get rid of the lesser competitors.
I don't know, though. I would beg to differ on that one because I think that when you look at the men's Survivor Series match, it wasn't as sloppy at the beginning. I don't know.
All of the people in the 5-on-5 men's match were top tier.
I know. I don't know. I did think it was somewhat predictable that they were going to get Nia Jax counted out because I just felt like that's the only way they were going to get rid of her. Unless Tamina was the only viable threat to oust her, I felt.
So in that theory, you can't have a small person beat a big person.
Yeah, it's highly unbelievable. It can be done, but it's got to be done right. And so, nonetheless, Team Raw wins. Asuka is the sole survivor. and we'll talk a little bit more about what's going on with the women's division in a little bit. So let's move on to a match that I had very little interest in, even though I did maybe backpedal a little bit and say that the promos to set this up was very well done. Miz versus Baron Corbin.
Is it because it was a glorified exhibition match and it really didn't matter? They both kept their titles?
Yeah, I think that that's one of the things that I think that took away from it. Plus, I'm just not interested in Baron Corbin still to this day. I don't care about him. There's nothing about him that is interesting. In fact, I wrote down, because I took some notes on NXT TakeOver War Games, Lars Sullivan would make a great tag team with Baron Corbin, and that might actually interest me. But Baron Corbin on his own, I don't care. There's nothing that he is involved in that I give a shit about, to be just bluntly honest.
Is it lack of verbal skills that there's no character development?
Yeah, there's no character development, lack of skills. If he wasn't 6'8", and, you know, 275, he wouldn't be in the WWE. All right. And the fact that, quite frankly, he wouldn't be in wrestling anyways, because as he's, you know, as it's been duly noted through various different media outlets, he was a football guy that just came wanted to try out wrestling. And he just doesn't, I don't think he, it comes off to me like he doesn't care about the business. He's
Could
another
be.
Lex Luger. He's just there for a paycheck, man.
I thought there would be more Maurice interaction.
Yeah. Yeah, because they pointed it out. She's at ringside.
She did get a slap or two in.
Yeah.
Which is more than the Miz did.
Mm-hmm. I did think the end of the match was good. It was a good finish.
Yeah.
I thought it was, because it came kind of out of nowhere, and I liked that. I thought that that was very good. I dug that. But just overall, I'm like, eh.
Well, they cared enough in Baron Corbin to put the money in the bank on him.
Sure.
Took it away quickly.
Mm-hmm. Gave him the U.S. title.
I do think that he needed this to regain some momentum because his feud with Sin Cara didn't get anybody excited. Now, there again, is that because Baron Corbin and Sin Cara don't have any verbal skills?
Well, yes, and I think that nobody cares about Sin Cara because he's just he's never been pushed the right way. I don't think he's ever been pushed the way that he should be.
Would it be stereotypical to put him on 205?
No, it wouldn't be. I don't think it would be at all. I think that he would probably be a better fit there. Hey, and you know what? Kudos to Sin Cara that the dude has kept the job and he's stuck around for as long as he has, you know, because, and he is the second one, I know. He is the second one.
Okay.
But, I mean, good for that guy. Hununcio was who he was before, so I mean, good for him. But yeah, ultimately, I think that, yeah, Corbin, they got to do something with him, and I don't think, as evident by his feud with John Cena, I don't think he's ready for the big time, so to speak.
Clearly not.
And so he's kind of stuck in this mid-card, but they got to do something to make him interesting.
I gave that match a 6 out of 10.
Oh, okay. You were kinder than me. Yeah. I probably would have given it a 4 out of 10. But I'll tell you what they rebounded very nicely with. The Usos versus the Bar. I thought this was an excellent tag team match. I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed that the Usos made all the Bar jokes, including I popped for the pole vault reference. I enjoyed that.
Yep.
That was very good. I thought this match was phenomenal and just very, very well done.
Two tag teams I didn't like originally, but I'm liking them both now.
Yeah, I totally agree. I did not like the Bar at all when they first started, but and it's actually piqued my interest in Sheamus, because prior to that, Sheamus on his own, don't care. I would probably turn the channel when he would come on. But teaming him with Cesaro, and now that they're on the same page, they do make a very good tag team. The Usos, I think they've always been very talented. I agree with DJ Joey Blaze that they're getting a lot of traction with their Uso Penitentiary shtick, even though I still don't quite get it. Are they gang members? Are they prisoners? Were they in the penitentiary? Like, I don't get it, but
since day one-ish.
Yeah. they're growing on me.
Okay. Do you think the Usos could ever split up and either one would ever have a title?
No.
If one had an injury, could one have the U.S. or IC title?
I don't see it happening.
Okay. So Sheamus had been a world champion.
Mm-hmm.
Cesaro's had IC title a couple times.
And U.S.
Cesaro is just a star waiting to happen.
Oh, I thought that from day one-ish.
And he's not even doing the swing anymore.
No,
or seldom.
No, Cesaro is so talented. And yeah, I don't know why... he hasn't gotten that giant push because he's
he could live up to
talented.
It.
He could.
There again, maybe he doesn't have the verbal skills.
Possibility, but he's not bad on the mic when he's done. No. I don't like the new mouthpiece thing, and we've talked about that.
I feel very uncomfortable
for
him.
Yeah, it's just. I don't know. I know it's part of the, I guess, the gimmick right now, but I'm not digging it. But overall, I thought this was an excellent match.
Gave it a 7 out of 10.
Yeah, I would agree with that wholeheartedly. This is the match that I think was, quite frankly, the worst match of the night. It was as bad as Enzo and Kalisto. Alexa Bliss versus Charlotte. I felt that this match was incredibly sloppy. I know he won't care, but my colleague Adam Michaels had texted me during the match. He goes, "This is because Bliss is overrated." I think that maybe that's a little harsh. But it wasn't a good match. I don't know what the malfunction of the junction was between these two, but it was bad.
We also have to realize that we're putting the shortest and the tallest woman together. Could there be problems because of the size differences? You
know what? That's a good point, Rand. I don't know. I mean, I think in all my years of being involved in professional wrestling, I think that if that is an issue, that you should... I've always seen workers being able to figure out a way to make it work.
Right.
And these two, I don't think, did. So maybe that is a valid point. Maybe they didn't put in... I don't want to say they didn't put in enough time, make them sound lazy, because it's not that. Maybe they just didn't communicate how they wanted to do certain things.
Or is it Charlotte's a better heel than she is a face?
That's a good point, too. I don't know, but what about her old man? I mean, was he a better heel or was he a better face? And I think, personally, myself, I think he was a better heel.
Oh, clearly. Dirtiest player in the game.
Yeah. So I don't know. Charlotte does pick up the victory, but I thought it was surprisingly bad. I expected more.
Charlotte won with a big boot and then a figure eight. Now, the figure eight's a variation on a figure four.
Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of shots that Alexa took to Charlotte's ribs. If you really do that, can you get into the figure four and extend it into the figure eight?
That's a good point.
It should have looked like it was more of an effort after the injury.
Yeah, you know what? And that's something that I think that's universal, though. Ringside, just to be honest, I think that there's the lack of people selling injuries. All right, is really a lost art a lot. You know, there's so many times, you know, matches will go down, the winner is announced and they don't sell that they have been through a fight. And I think that that's something that is unfortunately an epidemic across all of professional wrestling right now.
I do think Alexa is a very good heel.
I do too.
I think she's a spoiled brat.
I do too.
I think it's a great character.
Yes. I do disagree with Mr. Adam Michaels. I don't believe she's overrated, but I think that she's still obviously by what happened on this pay-per-view, she's still got a little bit of work to do able to get in there and work any style with any type of person. And so, like I said, it was kind of, unfortunately, a surprisingly bad match.
The two people that I think worked the best with Big and Small were Chris Benoit and Eddie Guerrero. They could work with anybody of any size. They could work luchador. They could work against the strong, powerful people. Mm-hmm. I think they were the most versatile two wrestlers. We don't have anybody like that right now, do we? Cena can't go with small people. Can Orton go with small people?
I don't know. That's a good point. I'm trying to think back to some of those opponents, and it's you got to – wow. Geez, I don't know. That would be a good point to research. Because
look that up, DJ Joey Blaze. You got plenty of time.
Let's talk about it. We got Big and Small in the next match. Brock Lesnar taking on AJ Styles. This match delivered on what we thought it was going to be. We got this one right.
It was Brock showing how big and strong he is, throwing, suplexing AJ Styles. But AJ made it work because at all times you kept thinking, he's still in this.
Yeah.
He can do this.
It was believable that he only needed that small window of opportunity to hit something. And he had him.
He stayed with it. He sold.
He did. There's an example. So there you go. There's an example of selling. There you go. That's the way it's done, is watch AJ in this match. And definitely, I agree.
He's phenomenal.
Aha.
I gave this match a 9 out of 10.
I would agree with that rating too, because it was captivating. Maybe it wasn't entertaining, and maybe it wasn't the athletic contest you hoped for, but it was captivating to see who was going to come out on top, and Brock did indeed get the victory.
I've told people for years, I really think the strongest emotion in wrestling is sympathy.
Yeah.
When you have a big guy throwing around AJ Styles, the beast incarnate throwing around the phenomenal one, after a while, you start feeling bad for AJ, and you're like, come on, let's do this.
Mm-hmm.
My wife's favorite wrestler is Rey Mysterio. Why? He's a small guy. It's not fair that everybody's picking on him, and you start to root for him.
Mm-hmm.
Can the smaller wrestler overcome the size difference?
That's a great, and that was on display in this match. It was certainly, and you know what, we would not have got that if it was Jinder Mahal versus Brock Lesnar. I don't think that connection would have been there. So I think this was a wise move on whoever booked this. That's the way to go.
Does Jinder get the title back at some point? I'm afraid so.
I think he is. I definitely do believe that he, and he deserves it. He's done a great job with that run, and I think many people probably didn't think that he would do such a great job. But, yeah, I think he gets it back. I think he does get another run with it. How long? I don't know. Because I still think that we're going to see that title be defended at WrestleMania, Nakamura versus AJ Styles, with AJ having that belt.
So you're saying that you think Jinder gets it back and loses it back to AJ?
I think so. That's what I think is going to happen. So now we go to the Men's Survivor Series match, which... I thought this was a pretty good match up until the closing moments. Here is just two things I would like to mention real quick. Again, maybe it's the ring announcer in me, but there is no way in hell that Shane McMahon weighs in at 245 pounds. And that's what they announced him at. I'm like, that's bullshit.
Does that include his wallet?
Yeah, maybe he has some gold in his pockets, yeah. And if Michael Cole continued to call Nakamura Shin one more time, I was throwing my remote at the TV. I don't like that. First of all, let's also throw this out there. We haven't talked about it at all. A 5-man commentary team. Unnecessary.
Truly.
Unnecessary.
Truly. I did think that you would want to have, if you have three, where you have one on each side and one announcer down the middle.
That should have been the way to go.
Yes. So you would have gotten rid of one on each side.
Yes, I would have. Okay. Yes, I would have put Corey Graves in the middle, and he did a commendable job. I got to give him credit for playing that devil's advocate all night long. Him in the middle, and put Cole, and then put probably Byron Saxton. I wouldn't have put Tom Phillips over there, just because I think that Saxton takes so much grief from Graves, and it's somewhat entertaining. And I think that would be a better mix.
Do you think that you needed Cole and you think you needed the voice of each
show? I think so. I think you do.
Corey's on both sides.
Corey's on both sides, correct. Yeah. Yes. Yes, because he took the slot, I guess, for Mauro. JBL. Well, JBL, yeah, after Mauro left.
So Team Raw was Triple H, Finn Balor, Samoa Joe, Braun, Kurt Angle. SmackDown had Shane McMahon, Randy Orton, Shinsuke Nakamura, Bobby Roode, and they kept calling him the free agent John Cena. You kept thinking something was going to happen where Cena had been on both teams. Was he going to stay on that team?
Right.
So they teased something that never came around.
Yeah. Well, hey, maybe, you know what? I tip my hat to them. That's a great way to get all of the folks on the internet, you know, off your case, you know. You know, hey, I got to say, again, I think we saw that Shane took some crazy-ass bumps. I jotted down the bump that he took from Balor's dropkick on the floor, that running dropkick. That was hideous.
Yeah.
That was really bad. It looked really bad, you know. I thought it was very good overall. I like the fact that they put Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn involved in it. They came out and got involved a little bit, and I thought that was good to continue that storyline. Yes, most definitely. Team Raw wins, and then we have the issue between Braun Strowman and Triple H. And this is where I think this match went off the rails. Let's not be dumb. We all know that we're looking at Kurt Angle and Triple H at WrestleMania. So then why even kind of interject Braun Strowman into this? Because what are you going to achieve with it? If Triple H beats Braun Strowman, right? So let's go with this.
Takes all the momentum away from Braun.
Braun Strowman's got all this momentum that he's built up. It's wasted. You know Triple H is not going to put Braun over because he needs the momentum rolling into WrestleMania to take on Kurt Angle. So why the hell did you do it? Why wasn't it Angle and Triple H at the end where they could have done this, and then it would have made so much more of a cohesive storyline and so much better for WrestleMania? I mean, no brainer, right?
You would think. I saw the matches having four veterans: Triple H, Cena, Kurt Angle, and Randy Orton.
Mm-hmm.
I also saw five relatively new people: Finn Balor, Samoa Joe, Braun, Bobby Roode, and Shinsuke Nakamura,
mm-hmm.
all having first-time interactions with each other.
Sure.
So we had some old, some current wrestlers, and some vintage wrestlers or veteran wrestlers.
Sure, yeah.
And we also had the McMahon family storyline between Triple H and Shane.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think we need... I think we have enough people on the roster that we don't need McMahon drama.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, that's true. And now, see, I'm trying to think back. I don't have it in my notes. Was there any confrontation between Triple H and Shane? I think there was a little bit.
Close to the end.
And it was only a couple of minutes, if you will, in the match.
Triple H tagged himself in and took out Shane.
Right.
So now we have Stephanie and Triple H kind of against Shane.
Yeah. But I agree with you. I don't think we need the McMahon family drama. I think that can go away, you know, and hopefully...
I'm not sure it's ever going to.
Not sure. Right, exactly. That's what I was going to say. As long as Vince is around, I don't think that's going to happen. But the show closes with Braun beating the shit out of Triple H, and there we go. Survivor Series for this year is in the books. But overall, I did like it. I think it was a really good pay-per-view overall. Now, you did state that you did not watch NXT, but I'd just like to throw out a few things real quick about it. I did watch it. I thought it was an okay takeover. I think that there were some really good matches, and there were some that were not so great. I think their opener was awful, and I hate to say that because I like Cassius Ohno, but he and Lars Sullivan just did not do a very good job. It was forearm kick, forearm kick, forearm kick, punch, body slam, forearm kick, forearm kick. I don't do more, damn it. Cassius Ohno, you can do more. Aleister Black of Velveteen Dream was amazing. Like, that was the best match of the night. And I can't believe I'm saying that, because I know that I've been on record saying I'm not a big Aleister Black fan, but those two guys tore down the house.
Sometimes when you don't expect it.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes when you have low expectations.
Yeah, exactly. They put Ember Moon over for the women's title, which I'm not a big fan of. Here was the big shock, putting Cien Almas over as the NXT champion over Drew McIntyre, which, you know, as we mentioned last time, if Drew loses, does he come up to the main roster? He hasn't yet. So is that in the works?
Also injured.
Oh, that's true. That's correct. He tore a bicep. That's right. I forgot about that. I didn't jot that down. The War Games match I thought was okay. I felt like, this is my problem. This is the two gripes that I had about NXT War Games. One, the main event. Look, if you have a violent match, I get disconnected. I don't get into it if people aren't bleeding. I'm sorry.
So you need the blood to...
to give me that extra oomph to care about this match, to really...
legitimize blood.
To legitimize it. It's a fight. Someone's going to get hurt. Someone's going to get messed up. And you need the visual, you know? And so with it not having... And yes, they use kendo sticks and steel chairs, and there was all kinds of hellacious bumps from the cage, and that was great. But to me, it just... if somebody had gigged, it would have put it over the top for me.
Do you think you needed a cage top?
Well, the rumor was that they wanted to do spots from the top of the cage, so you couldn't have the top. So I think that was it. Here's my other gripe. So that was gripe number one. Gripe number two with NXT TakeOver War Games was, I think that NXT would be wise to start going back to smaller venues. Because again, they were in the Toyota Center. There were a lot of empty seats, and you could see it, you know, on the wide shot. Why not move it to a smaller area?
Can you sell the same arena four nights in a row? Because that's what they did.
Well, true. You're right. Because Raw and SmackDown was there. You're right. That's
four nights in a row. That's the same city.
Mm-hmm.
That's tough to do.
That is. I just think that moving it to a smaller venue would have behooved the NXT show.
But now, Houston is the fourth largest city in America.
Yeah. I did not know that.
But they've also had a lot of tornadoes and storm problems.
Yeah, right, sure. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you know what? That would be interesting to see how many people were in, or how the attendance was impacted by those hurricanes. You know, the hurricane that came through and whatnot. You got to wonder about that. But nevertheless, so that's in the can. So let's talk now about some of the fallout, so to speak, of Survivor Series. We alluded to it. They have added new women from NXT. They've pulled them on up. They've made an impact. We have Paige returning on Raw along with Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville. On the other side of the equation on SmackDown, Liv Morgan, Ruby Riott, and Sarah Logan joining the fray up there. So what are your thoughts on these six women?
Ironically, it's after Survivor Series where you have gangs.
Yeah. But where's Los Barriquas when you need them? Or DOA? Anyways.
Oh, Los Barriquas.
I think a lot of people are wondering why Peyton Royce and Billie Kay were not two of them pulled up. And I agree with those people that are throwing out that question, because I think those two would have been a better fit. I'm not a big fan of Liv Morgan. I think she is just Carmella too. I don't understand.
Maybe you don't bring up your best workers in those situations because they don't need to be best workers.
Well, good point.
It doesn't take a whole lot of talent to stomp somebody when they're down, and I can do that for a paycheck.
Sure. I also question this Sonya Deville character because of this. Like, you know, we all know that she's got the MMA background. She's from Tough Enough a couple of years ago. And, you know, and again, I know this is going to sound crass, but I knew right then when she was on Tough Enough and I was watching it and she stated that she was openly gay, I'm like, she's going to get a contract. I mean, why wouldn't you, marketing-wise? You're a gay female MMA artist. Vince should sign you if you don't even win Tough Enough. So she did get signed, okay, and she's been working in NXT and heard good things. But here's the thing. If you are trying to get... Ronda Rousey to show up at WrestleMania to do something with her and her crew, why do you need another MMA woman on the roster? Like, that's too many, because you're not going to put her with Ronda Rousey. I don't think that would make sense.
I think Ronda Rousey's already signed. I think that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
If it wasn't going to happen, you wouldn't hear anything about it.
Well, so you're saying that you think that during negotiations, probably really close to signing her?
I think they're just keeping the fan into flames.
Out there. Yeah.
Now,
but you agree with me, like, if you already have that crew,
right.
Her and I don't remember the other two ladies' names, I'm sorry, and Shayna Baszler is also part of that crew. So you got four women, the four horsewomen, that's what they're called. Why do you need a fifth person that's got the same gimmick? Like, I don't understand it. I would not have pulled that girl up. I would have left her down.
I don't think you don't have to bring up your, excuse me, it doesn't take the most talent to be in a gang.
Oh, you're true. Very true. Very true.
As long as you can speak and attack somebody from behind, you can be in that gang.
So here's my question. Is Paige put aside all of the personal issues that have gone on in her life over the last couple of years that led to her walking out and leaving? Is everything copacetic there? Is she still with ADR? I don't even know that.
I think she still is.
She is still.
I didn't realize that she had screws in her neck.
No, that's that was part of the controversy. It was about the supposed neck injury. Some in the camp said that there was no neck injury. I believe WWE doctors said that there wasn't one. She claimed there was. I mean, there was a lot of craziness with that whole situation. Let's just be honest.
I think my good buddy Eric Bischoff says controversy creates cash.
That's true. So we got women coming up. Maybe a Royal Rumble for the ladies in January. That would be sweet. I would pop for that.
Do you think maybe 20 people? Contestants?
Yeah, sure. You could do that. You could do 20 women.
Why not?
That would. I'm sure. You know, not to sound sexist, but I'm sure they would pare it back. You know, because the men would have 30 or 40 that they would pare it back. You know,
I think 20 at the beginning of the show would be great.
Yeah, that would be an awesome thing.
You know? Do not insult it by putting it on the pre-show. Have it be the opening match. The greatest thing about Royal Rumbles or Battle Royals. When you have that many people together at once, you can just mix and match storylines all over the place.
Yeah, sure. And
it's like a restart.
It is, and you don't have to necessarily follow through with them because it could be a one-time thing.
A tease.
And that is true. You know, so hopefully we'll see a women's Royal Rumble match coming up here in January.
We've seen other firsts from the women. We've seen a Hell in a Cell match.
Hell in a Cell. Yeah, you got it. So
was this the first women's Survivor Series match?
No. There's been Survivor Series matches with women. I can remember one with, I believe, Moolah and the Jumping Bomb Angels way back in the 80s. So,
wow. Wow, that's a reference before my time.
Okay, there you go. Anything else that's been interesting on SmackDown or Raw that has happened besides, you know, the attack from the women from NXT? I know that there's been some chatter about Daniel Bryan, you know, and his character and what's going on with it on SmackDown.
I think there's going to be some dissension there. I think he's doing things counterproductive or against
Shane. Yeah,
against Shane. Could he align himself with Sammy and Kevin?
I don't know. That would be an interesting pairing.
I knew he wasn't going to fire him.
No, of course not.
I think he's going to make him run through the gauntlet, have them.
Yes.
Two handicap matches every week.
Sure.
And they will survive.
I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how that pans out. But let's go ahead and let's switch gears to something else that we didn't get a chance to talk about last time. And that would be the Ric Flair 3430. Sat down and watched it the weekend after we recorded the Survivor Series preview episode. So let's talk a little bit about it. You stated off air that the last 20 minutes was the toughest to get through, and I agree with you wholeheartedly. You talk about sympathy. You talk about that. You felt so damn bad for Rick when he was there talking about Reed and what happened.
In his life, what gave him the greatest accomplishment, his dedication and love of the wrestling industry, is also what gave him his greatest heartache.
Yep.
Losing his son.
Yep.
David and Reed both wanted to get into the industry to be with their dad.
Yeah.
Charlotte, ironically, did not want to.
Right. That and I knew that from what I'd read and heard before. I'll tell you the two surprising parts that I thought, and again, something that you mentioned, I was surprised that Hogan admitted that Flair was better than him. Because I didn't think, and I know that, let's be honest, Hulk Hogan's kind of maybe a kinder, gentler Hulk Hogan. After all the things that have happened, you know, with his career over the last few years. But yeah, I mean, I was surprised by that. I was surprised, though, that the small segment that Triple H mentioned and alluded to with Reed about testing him and telling Rick and being very honest and saying, you know, Rick will lie to you. And so, well, I don't know how that happened. And I thought that both of those were the two most interesting and maybe downright shocking parts of that documentary.
Ric Flair alluded to working matches with different people that he and Steamboat, for example,
legendary,
would not talk before the match.
Yes.
He would go out there and communicate during the match for an hour.
Yeah, and walking and talking for an hour. It was magical.
I have a hard time mowing the yard for an hour, let alone throwing a 240-pound person around in front of 10,000 people.
Yeah, exactly.
And age-wise, I'm not that much different than what Ric Flair was at these times.
Yeah, I mean, it is amazing that the man, it just, you know, from the partying and the drinking and the carousing and still performing every single night and going on the road. And, you know, there was very few people that I think, you know, it's been attested to that, you know, Jack Briscoe wanted to drop the NWA world title because he hated the travel schedule. And that's why he dropped it. I think they're in his, one of his last runs, I think in 78 or 79. And so you got to think that that travel back in those days, you know, it was brutal. It was chaotic. And man, just Ric Flair's like a machine.
In a perfect world, Ric Flair would have retired and stayed retired at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
The crescendo should have happened in Orlando. Yeah. He should have gone out. Everybody would have loved him. But if you watch the earlier parts of the movie, he made so many documentary. He made so many mistakes, so many financial problems. There was at one time a company called the Ric Flair Financial Planning Company.
I remember hearing about that in Charlotte, North Carolina. Yeah.
How ironic is that? That's like saying the Dolly Parton hair factory. No, it's so fake, it should not have happened.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that's all public knowledge, you know.
It's so unfortunate that he goes to TNA Impact. Oh. And they use him as this gym equipment to get everybody else over. He should not have had matches with all those people.
No.
He should not have lost all those people.
Agreed.
He should not have been the lunatic dropping the elbow on his jacket to make people look good.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And you could even say that with the last, say, 2 years in WCW, the same thing. He was really made kind of a mockery, you know, of his career there. But ultimately, though, the 30 for 30 was fantastic. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Take out the commercials, probably 70 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I could have watched another 2 hours because I know there's just more stories.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Most definitely.
The Halle Berry story.
Yeah. Or the Harley Race story. He told a story about Harley Race one time on Jericho's podcast that was fascinating.
It might have been on a Dusty Rhodes web show on WWE Network where they were in such competition with each other. One guy would go out and buy a fur coat for his wife. The other guy would see it and go out and buy a fur coat for his wife.
Right.
They were that competitive in real life. Those two guys, there again, they could go an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And if you ever watch Triple H talk about the business, telling stories.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Ric Flair admitted he's selling booze and sex. Mm-hmm. Hulk Hogan selling vitamins.
Yeah, and milk.
And milk.
To kids, yeah, exactly. But anyways, well, we're getting up to about 50 minutes here, so ringside. Anything else there real quick?
Let's let DJ Joey Blaze say a couple of words of glory here,
Go
Joe.
Go ahead. You're taking so much abuse here, Joey.
Crickets.
All right, well, do you want to tell folks where they can find you on the internet?
Tomorrow you'll see me at the Blue Jacket game, section 112.
There you go. Okay, stop by and say hey. And root on the Jackets. They got two tomorrow. The Devils? Is that who they have?
How about the Carolina Panthers? Hurricane.
Okay. They got the Canes tomorrow. I thought it was... Oh, no. The Devils, I think... Nope. Never mind. Devils are somewhere else. Sorry. Anyways, nobody cares about the NHL. They're listening to us talk about wrestling. So.
And once again, another podcast with no mention of antisocial camera.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Why did you... Okay. Anyways, on that note... Ringside Rand, thanks for stopping by, man. Royal Rumble time. You and hopefully Mr. Joey Blaze will be able to be here. Car problems will be fixed and everything, but that's all right. We miss you, DJ Joey Blaze. With that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up this episode.
Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Ringside Rand and yours truly talking about the Survivor Series. I promise that in subsequent pay-per-view reviews and previews, I will try to have them up in a more timely manner. It just, you know, with all of the holiday hustle and bustle around Thanksgiving, the three of us were just pulled in all different directions, and that's why it took forever to get this episode up. But I hope you enjoyed it, and you can let me know if you enjoyed it by shooting me an email. JohnOrlando@pvdcast.com is one way to contact me, or you can find me on Twitter @pvdmvp. You can even leave me a quick message on the Facebook page of the PVDcast, and that, of course, is facebook.com/pvdcast. And you can get this podcast a variety of ways, as if like you need to be reminded of this information. But nonetheless, you can get your hands on the PVDcast at the online home of yours truly, PVDcast.com. You can find it on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, SoundCloud, Pod Paradise, and even the great folks at the Echo Network has this podcast. So all you got to do is find the easiest way to download it or to listen to it, and there you go. There you go. I make it so easy for you. 7 different ways, folks. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to jump on out of here. I will chat at each and every one of you later. And until then, stay righteous, stay independent.